I am Catherine, a grateful member of a worldwide fellowship called Al-Anon and Al-Ateen. And you have been fabulous to me. Thank you very much. I have my little ribbon on here because I got a beautiful basket last night, and I love it. And it's such a gift, and I know what goes into preparing for these events and the time that it took for someone to get that together and then to make me feel welcome and special, which we did. And so my sponsor and I got to have private time because we came together for this weekend, and I don't get that much with her anymore. There's always someone else around. And so we went back to the room, and we got to talk about a lot of stuff we hadn't talked about, and I did some writing. I always do a little bit of writing before I speak so that my house is clean when I come to you and I don't give you my mess. And so we got to do that, and we just got to have a girls' evening, and thank you. I am grateful to you that you allowed this to happen. And you've welcomed me, and I get to meet new people, and I love meeting new people in this fellowship. This is a fabulous clubhouse, and the sight is just, you turn off of that road out there and you feel God coming in. I love it, and I love it that Al-Anon is here, that you're not having to go someplace else to have your meetings. It's family recovery here because it is a family disease. Didn't understand that when I got here, but man, I lived it. And then the more I started getting into the literature and listening to people in the meetings, I understood what they talked about the family disease. And for those of you that don't know what Al-Anon is about, you know, we talked about our primary purpose is to help families and friends of alcoholics. I am here because of the effects of someone I love with the disease of alcoholism. And a lot of people don't understand what the effects are. The effects are growing up in the disease. For me, I am a child of incest, and it was a result of alcoholism. There's violence in alcoholism. There's infidelity in alcoholism. There's financial problems. All of that is living with the effects of. So through the years, living with the effects of, there were things that I started doing to fight the disease. And I tried to control the uncontrollable. It talks in our literature about trying to control the uncontrollable. Didn't get it. Didn't understand. I didn't know the first thing about what alcoholism was. I just knew that my life was not what I wanted it to be. From a very, very early age, I can remember the feelings of, is this all there is? Is this all there is? And comparing my insides and my home life to somebody's else's outsides. And I wanted what you had, but I didn't know what you had, but I wanted it because it had to be different than what I had. So through the years in this program and working the steps and the traditions of this program, I have gotten to be very, very grateful and happy for the life that I have today. And I don't want to be you. And I don't want to have your marriage. And I don't want to have your life. And I don't want to have your kids. I want to have exactly what I have. And thank God every day that I got to the rooms of Al-Anon before I killed someone or killed myself. That's the effects of alcoholism. I don't want to be so dramatic. I want to have a little bit of fun. You were reading here, and you were reading some of the traditions, and you were talking about continually taking a personal inventory. My recovery date in Al-Anon is I came to Al-Anon after a Memorial Day weekend. You'll notice that after all the holidays, the Al-Anon rooms fill up. And we were moving. One of the things that I like to do is I like to run away from the problem. So my answer was always to move. And I lived in a violent marriage. His answer was to break things, and we did. You talked about the Russian roulette last night. That's what we did. He'd sit there with the gun in his lap, and he'd point the gun at me, and if I can't have you, nobody can have you. And then he'd point it at him, but if I can't have you, I don't want to live. And we did that. And what I heard in these rooms is I heard that we adjust, we readjust, and we maladjust. That became normal. The abnormal became normal in our home. We expected it. And so how did I combat that? I became very quiet. I used my silence as a weapon. I think it's in our ODAD. It talks about using silence as a weapon, and I perfected that. But I thought inside of me, if I was just quiet enough, tomorrow it would be different. And that was what happened as a child. When all that stuff was going on as a child, if I'm just quiet enough, tomorrow it would be different. And it never was. It only got worse. And it only got worse. And the more I didn't stand for myself, we have a saying in Al-Anon that being able to stand for ourselves but not against our fellows. So every time I was unable to stand for myself, I hated myself a little bit more, and then I just kept the merry-go-round going. And I hated him, I hated me, I hated our life, but I did nothing about it. And I didn't know anything about Al-Anon, I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. I just knew when he drank, he got mean. So what my job was to do was to try and keep it quiet so that the neighbors wouldn't hear. Anybody that knows my husband knows that even in a normal voice, the neighbors hear. But that was my thing. And so I lived in that state of denial, trying to keep a lid on it, trying to keep it down. So that is what I married into the second time. The first time I wanted, for me, I just wanted to be anywhere else than where I was. And so I married the first time and I moved to California. I grew up in Miami. And so I went out there. My husband was a musician, and I thought, it'll be better. It'll be better. And then that martyr part of me really kicked in because somebody had to earn some money because a musician doesn't make a lot of money. And so I was the one that went out to work, and I started that whole cycle of look at me, look at what I'm doing. And the first person that said, oh, you poor thing, God, did I love that. Please tell me I'm a poor thing and look at how good I'm doing because I'm in this marriage. But then that part of me that I want what you have and I'm not getting what I want, I moved back to my home in Miami and left my husband there, and then he and his entire family followed. But at a certain point, I knew that I needed it to be different. And so I was able to walk away from that marriage. The second marriage, I couldn't walk away from because the disease had started affecting me so much, and I couldn't take care of myself in any situation whatsoever. I joke today about every time I get married, I turn my will and my life over to the care of my husband. And every time I get married, I stop driving. And so I became very dependent on an alcoholic to take me wherever I needed to go. We went plenty. And then I'd be angry because I didn't go myself. And I can remember working with my sponsor that I have today. The first time I told her I didn't know how to put gas in my car, she says, really? Anybody that knows her, she likes that. Really? So that was one of the first things she had me do. She had me learn how to put gas in my car, learn how to change a tire, learn how to get help in case he wasn't there. What that did for me, and then I had to get in the car and drive to her house. And in Atlanta, you've got inside the perimeter and you've got outside the perimeter. I was inside at the time and she was outside. And so for me to get behind the wheel of the car and drive from Toco Hills to Lawrenceville was probably one of the most fearful things I had done in years. I could live with what I was living with because it was gradual. I knew what to expect and I figured out how to handle it. But to get in the car and drive myself to her house, I was like this. I was like this. But I did it. And I have been taking good orderly direction since then. I trust her. I trust her with my life. And she has never steered me wrong. Never. Now, I have, on occasion, thought that I might know a little bit more than she did. And chose not to do anything with it for a moment. But then I would do what it was I needed to do. And I always, always, always feel better. So that's kind of where I was when I got started here. It was Memorial Day weekend, moving one more time, always my choice to move because if we move, it'll be different. This time it'll be different, and I won't have the memories of what we just went through. So this time it will be different. Well, this time it wasn't. He started drinking early, early, early. By 10 o'clock that morning, he's in a blackout. I didn't know what blackouts were. I just know he got drunk, he got mean. We did that cycle, and then tomorrow I could show the bruises and I could tell him everything that happened. Then for a couple of weeks, he'd be in the remorse and the guilt, and I'd get whatever I wanted. Didn't see that part until I did my fourth step. So we were in that place, and I would make him promise me, don't drink. Don't drink. And then he'd call and I'd say, how many have you had? Well, if you've ever been around an active alcoholic, he's going to tell you he's had two. So he had two. So by the time he got to where I was, the violence had erupted. And why I share this part is I want to share this part because for the family member, if the family member continues to live in this and does not get help, if the family member does not get help, what happened for me is it snapped that night. And I didn't care. I didn't care anymore what happened. And so I grabbed the gun that night. I could be in a prison somewhere because I killed my husband. But God reached down in our lives that night and said, not yet. And that gun did not have bullets in it that night. That was the first time I thought I could leave, and I left that house. But alcoholism will isolate you. And I had pushed everybody in my life out of my life except for the man that I was married to. And so that night, I drove around and around and around Atlanta, and I had nowhere to go. So I went back to that house that I knew what was waiting for me. At least I thought I knew what was waiting for me. So we're brand new. We're moving in that day. So when I get back to that house, we have a fire truck out front. We have a helicopter overhead. We have the police there. The whole neighborhood's in my front yard. And they're taking my husband out of the house in handcuffs. Well, he tried to burn the house down while I was driving around Atlanta. So I'm standing in the yard, humiliated, and this lady next to me comes over and puts her arm around me, and she says, welcome to the neighborhood, honey. So I would, for months, I would drive all the way around so I wouldn't have to go by her house because I didn't want her to see me. And the miracle of what this program is, the leveling of what AA and Al-Anon bring to us, is I was on the Al-Anon hotline after I had been in for a while, and I get a phone call and I start sharing experience, strength, and hope. She says, oh my God, you're the one with the fire truck, aren't you? And it was this lady that had given me comfort in a time that I needed some kind of comfort. But that's what brought us here. My husband had never been arrested. You were talking about the Yetts. We were talking about the Yetts last night. He'd never been arrested. He'd never gotten a DUI. The never. He hadn't lost his business yet. He hadn't lost the family. He hadn't lost nothing. The Yetts. Well, he woke up in jail, and he didn't know how he got there. And it scared him. And we, as the family members, I can remember that night, we kept getting these phone calls from the jail. We kept getting these collect phone calls. And I look at my mother-in-law, because, of course, I went to her house because I didn't know where else to go. And she's telling me, I don't want him. You take him. I've got one of my own. But we kept getting these collect phone calls. And I look at her and I go, I thought they only got one phone call. What's this about? Never occurred to me that I didn't have to accept the collect phone call. Al-Anon taught me that. I sponsored a lady years later that used to get the beeper. It was when the beepers were going off. And she used to get the panic beepers, and then she'd stop at a payphone and call. Never occurred to her that she didn't have to call him back. We learned those little kind of tidbits sitting in the rooms with people sharing. So that was just kind of how we got here. There was a lot of stuff that went on in alcoholism with my first marriage. Because I'm a runner, when I married the second man, the first husband, it was about ownership. Our relationship was about ownership. And we had a daughter of that marriage. We had a beautiful little girl from that marriage. He felt he owned her, and he felt he owned me. And so my answer was to run and to not let him know. So I put my mother on an airplane because I had been taking care of her for a long time. I put my daughter on an airplane. We packed up our car, and we drove to Atlanta. In a few months, my ex-husband had found where she was and took her from school, and I didn't see her again for 7 years. That night that he took her, I'm living with this violent guy over here. I didn't know how to combat that. He had somebody lined up ready to go down and break somebody's knees to get her back and bring her back. And I made a decision at that point that she didn't need to live in what I was living in, and I knew I couldn't get out. So I told them not to go get her. And I lived with that guilt. Because when someone says, oh, you're married, you got any kids? And you don't know how to answer. And if I say, no, we don't have any kids, then I felt like I was betraying my daughter. And then if I said, yes, but she doesn't live with me, how do you tell someone you don't have custody of your child? So I lived with that guilt, and I lived with it for several years in this program. But the healing power of what goes on here is we all have walked it. I'm not alone. I thought I was alone, and I had no place to share that stuff until I started sitting in the rooms of Al-Anon. You welcomed me, and you let me sit there, and you let me sit there for 9 months and not say anything other than, hi, I'm Catherine, and I pass. And at that time, we used to go around the room, and we'd share, and we'd go around the room, and I had to say, hi, I'm Catherine, and I pass. Now we have volunteers. we have group conscience about this all the time, and there's one lady that I've been going to meetings with for 20 years. She wants to have volunteers. I want to go around the room, and so we joke about it now. But for me, that had to happen for me to get to talk because, see, I had used silence, and so I stopped talking. I worked a full-time job. I was out there. I have always worked. I was out there functioning, doing what I needed to do in the real world, keeping this secret, and then going home to that secret. And then not being able to do what I needed to do for me in that environment. So I came in here and you loved me into this program and you just let me be. And I got to hear people share and I got to hear people talk about the literature. Whether I read it or not, I always have a piece of literature because at 2 o'clock in the morning when I'd be sitting in the floor of the closet, these are the words that came to me. I could open a book when I couldn't call somebody. And the words would come to me and I'd find peace. And I'd know that, okay, I can do this. We have a wonderful bookmark just for today. And in there it talks about I can do for 12 hours what I couldn't do for a lifetime. I broke it down. And I could do for 1 minute what I couldn't do for a lifetime. And so that's how I started healing. Everything was overwhelming. I thought I had to do everything now. And I thought everything was going to be forever. And it wasn't. And I can tell you that if you're new and you're sitting in this room and you're not sure you want to be here, it's not going to be this way forever. When I was introduced to this program, my husband was in treatment, and I went to one of those meetings at the treatment center. And there were 30 people in there just like me. They were angry. They were confused. They wanted it to be somebody else's fault, and they didn't know what to do. And there was the one voice of Al-Anon. And when we were going around the circle, everybody was trying to one-up the other one on how bad it was at their house. The first time we were able to share. And so we were one up in each other. And then this one voice of Al-Anon looked at us and she said, it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be that way anymore. I didn't know what it meant, but I knew that something was changing and something was shifting. And there might be an answer out there for me. So I kept going back to that treatment center. And then that lovely lady gave me the best piece. And I'm going to say it's advice. We don't give advice in Al-Anon, but it was advice. She said, honey, get out of the treatment center and get into the community. Get out there where there's recovery and where there's people that live or have lived with alcoholism, that are recovering and happy about being in recovery. It promises us in our opening that whether the alcoholic is still drinking or not, we will be okay. Years later, when my daughter came back into our life, she was 15 and she was well into her own path by then. And she's a runner. She picked it up from me and she liked to run away. And so she'd run away and get in trouble and come back and run away and get in trouble and come back. And then I'd start that thing on the telephone. Don't you see what you're doing? Let me get you some help. Let's get into treatment. And then I wouldn't hear from her for 6 months. So I could probably do 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and then the fear set in. And that horrible, paralyzing fear would set in. And I have no clue where I'm going with this. I lost my train of thought. But I know that when I would sit in those rooms, and I'd hear them say it. I don't think that's what they said. It's going to be okay. And so I started parroting back, it's going to be okay, it's going to be okay. This one lady called me on that. She said, it's not going to be okay. They die out there. But if you do what this program asks you to do, you will be okay. I got it. So I started working Al-Anon a different way with my child than I had with my husband. Detachment is the basic thing for me, let me tell you. From the beginning, get-go, everybody in my life, I have got to learn how to get out of God's way. With my husband, I had to let alcohol and AA do for him what I couldn't do for him. I had to get out of God's way and let him do whatever it was had to happen. 9 months into recovery, both of us, we came in about a week of each other. He's sitting in the living room and he had the gun in his lap again. And he's looking up at me and he's going, I don't think I can stay sober, but I know I can't drink. And that was the first time I didn't think I had to fix him. That was the first time I looked at him and I said, I love you, but I can't help you. And I went to the NABA Club is where we came into recovery. And so I went to the NABA Club and I went to those people in that room. And for the first time I shared with them from my heart. And they welcomed me and they loved me. And I didn't know if I was going to go back home and have his brains all over the wall. Those are the unknowns. Those are the effects of. I've got a lady in one of my groups. Her father did that on Thanksgiving. And she went to give him a Thanksgiving dinner, and that's what she found. So every Thanksgiving, that's what she gets to walk through. That's the effects of. So I didn't know. But what did happen is because I got out of God's way that night, my husband went to the NABBA Club. He went downstairs, and he let those men walk him through that. They stayed with him all night. They took him to the Biscayne Room. There was a midnight meeting. And that's where he had his spiritual awakening. Because there was a man who had been sober for a while that went back out. And it took him 15, 20 minutes to get from the back of the room to the front of the room. And those people sat there quietly and let him get up there. And he shared about going back out. And that's when my husband got it. And so he started doing what he needed to do. But the lesson for me is if I had stayed there at that house and tried to make him okay, tried to make his feelings okay, he wouldn't have had that. First big God shot about getting out of God's way. Get out of God's way and let God do what God's got to do. I'm walking through that again. I just got back. We also talked about taking the continual inventory. We were reading that. And the slips, the Al-Anon slips. You talked about, yeah. This past week, I got to go see my sister. And she has been one of the difficult relationships that I've walked through because when I was in that insane first part of our marriage, she's the one I'd call. I'd call her and I'd report him. And then she'd hear when my daughter was taken. She heard that. She heard that. She's never, ever forgiven my husband for that. And she has not allowed him to be a changed man. And so it's been a difficult relationship because if he's criticized, I feel like I'm criticized. And today we have worked so much on our relationship and on our recovery. It is our life today, and he is a changed man. He is not the man that I married. I have seen it. I have seen the miracles continually. And so I could not go back to that. I could not go back to that constant criticism and me heal. Because when I'm in that, I walk away thinking, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me that I continue to go down this path? Today I know I want to be on this path. It's not because I have to be, it's because I want to be. So it's been a strange relationship, but I've done a lot of work. My sponsor had me, because of things that happened with my dad and things that happened with my sister's husbands, it's never been a safe place for me in someone else's home. So because of that, we have started using the traditions in our home, and what Bob and I have done is we've looked at what is the primary purpose. What is the primary purpose of our home? It is to be a safe environment that serves God. So whenever we get off track, we come back to that and we remember that that's our primary purpose. This time when I went to see my sister, I don't know if she's alcoholic. I know that she's been drinking a lot of years and she can no longer process food. She's about 75 pounds. She is keeping a business going. I don't know how that's happening, but I spent time with her, and I spent the most time with her that I have in a lot of years. She can probably do 3 hours, and then she has to rest and sleep the rest of the day. And it's very, very painful to watch that. And it's painful to see the anger and the rage that she still carries. And I was thinking last night, why me? Why me? She grew up, even though he was her stepfather, she grew up with the same father I did. My brother grew up in the same household. Why did I get this thing and they didn't? And years ago, Barbara told me, she says, don't ask why. Just know and be grateful that you're the one that got it. So I see her, and for the first time, I've had compassion. And I walked away from that weekend with her knowing that I love her and I was able to be a loving sister to her without judging and criticizing her life. But to be there. And for me, I'm a doer. I have to constantly do. And when I'm in turmoil, you'll see me rearranging the chairs in the meeting room, or you'll see. I love to work in the yard. I go out in the yard and I just move stuff, dig stuff. It's great. But I have to do that. And so what I did for her is I remembered this time, what is your primary purpose to be there? It was to be with my sister. So I would sit in the chair next to her, and when she'd sleep, I'd stay put. And when she'd wake up, she'd see me there. And then she'd go back to sleep. What a gift. What a gift. But it started for me with writing one card a week, a month, writing one card a month and sending her a card and then making one phone call a week. And the phone calls were hard. I'm not going to tell you they weren't. So it was like a 30-second phone call. And then for many, many years now, I have made my one phone call a week, and it has rebuilt that relationship to what we can have today. It's not the ideal relationship. It's not what I would like sisters to be, but it is my reality. That was something else in Al-Anon that was very, very hard to accept, is what is your reality? See your reality. I learned very, very early on to tell the lie so that it'd be a little bit different, because I had to be the good guy, you had to be the bad guy. So I tell the lie, I believe the lie, then I live the lie. So my whole life was a lie. And I came in here, and I no longer had to see the lie or believe the lie. And alcoholism will tell me on a daily basis that what I see is not what I see. And my sponsor would tell me time and time again, don't doubt what you know, don't doubt what you know. Then I got to start working these steps, and I got to do that fourth step. And I didn't believe in that higher power that everybody was talking about. I thought God had me marry this man because it was my punishment for all those things that I did and didn't do in my past. I knew he was my punishment, and that was going to be the way it was going to be for the rest of my life. But this program allowed me to do that inventory, to write that resentment list, to take it all the way across, to see what my fears were, what caused those fears, and what my part was. And in every situation except the incest, I played a part. And in the incest, when I saw I didn't play a part, there was a freedom there. Because somehow, deep inside, I thought, what did I do? Somehow it's my fault. So the steps are my answer. And when I got to that fifth step, I can remember the way my sponsor did it for me, and I don't know that she does it this way with people now. I wrote on one day. We did the fifth step on the next day. She came to my house. She was 2 minutes late, and I was getting ready to call her because it's like, I got to get rid of this stuff. What I know from my own experience is I can't write all this stuff out and carry it for a month or 2 months or 3 months because I'll be insane. And I won't get to what I need to get at. In our literature, it talks about the power of taking pen to paper. There was a power when I started that fourth step. I prayed. I met with my sponsor first. We prayed. I got into my house. No telephone. My husband had to be gone. He was not allowed to come home till I was done, and he was worried to death that I was going to decide not to stay. But I had to be totally alone, and I brought God in. And when I took that pen to paper, I let God write through me. And then when I'd start to get up here again, I'd stop, and I'd go move stuff because I have to move stuff. And then I'd sit back down, and I'd say, okay, God, let me see what I need to see. And the magic of what happens in that fourth step happened for me. And I will tell you, it continues to happen for me. I wrote again this week, and I came home from my sister's, and I did great, and I felt good, and I come into my driveway, and the grass isn't cut. So who's going to catch it? Who's going to catch it? My husband. He's got enough recovery now, though, that he says, I didn't do anything wrong. And see, before we used to play on each other, I'd do that thing, I'd do that passive-aggressive thing, and then he'd start to get defensive, and then we'd be off and running. So this time, when I started getting like that, he walked off and smoked his cigar and said, you cool down, you go do what you need to go do, and I'll be over here, and when you're ready to talk, we'll talk. And we were able to do that this week. And I was able to get to the place of, I don't like the fact that my siblings are dying. My brother died in December, and I don't like the fact that my siblings are dying and my family is dying out. And I am confronted continually with the reality of living in an alcoholic family. Most of the time I can joke about it and be okay about it, but then the reality sets in, and it's sad. And I'm not going to tell you it's not sad. But God gave me you. See, I believe God replaces. Without a doubt, I believe God replaces. I had all these women around me when I didn't have my daughter around me. And then when she came back and she was doing that running away and running away, you were the ones that kept me sane. Probably 4 years in recovery, Bob and I, because we like to go, and we both like to go, and usually We don't like to go at the same time once we got into recovery. We didn't like to go at the same time, but this time we decided we wanted to go to Europe, and we wanted to live and work in Europe. So I went to my sponsor, he went to his sponsor, they co-signed it, and so off we go. So we've got 4 years in recovery, and we're the old-timers over there, and we're in Germany. And trying to control the uncontrollable, my daughter's off somewhere, she'd been in some kind of a devil worship thing, or she was in some kind of cult for a while. I didn't know that she wasn't part of it anymore, but she would just get on the back of somebody's motorcycle and off she'd go, and I wouldn't hear from her. Well, she ended up in Oregon, and I'm getting these newspaper reports that they're sacrificing people in this cult in Oregon. So here's Mom in Germany trying to control something. I don't know where she is. You know, my mind will go to the extreme. It will go from everything is fine and wonderful to she's dead on the floor somewhere. So there's this one lady that had about a year in Al-Anon, and I called her up and I said, I have to be with you. And she didn't know what to do with me. But I went to her house, and one of the things that my sponsor taught me in Atlanta was get in the car and build a support group. I called 3 Al-Anons a day, whether I knew what to say or not. I would call them anyway, so I was in the habit. So I knew how to get to these women's house. I was introduced to Al-Anon the moment my feet hit the ground over there. And I knew how to get to these women's houses. So I got there, and I sat there and cried and cried and cried. And she didn't know what to do. She's sitting there like, oh, my God. She'd make me coffee, and she'd bring it to me. And I told her, I said, Bob can't help me with this. Because at 4 years, I still blamed him. At 4 years, it was his fault. And that anger was still there. We were working on our marriage, and we were making progress. But I'll tell you what, a lifetime of what we lived in doesn't heal in 4 years. I can remember my sponsor telling me, she says, how old were you when you got to Al-Anon? I said, I was 32. She says, well, give Al-Anon 32 years before you decide whether to stay or go. And I'm glad I did. I'm not 32 years yet, but I'm glad I stayed, because I have a life today that I never would have imagined before. But this lady's trying to fix me. She didn't know what to do. But what happened for me, because at 4 years in both programs, and I've seen it time after time after time, 4 years is the arrogance year. Everybody thinks they got this deal. And it's a grow or go year. You start changing and growing in this fellowship, or you walk away. And the arrogance was there. You know, we're old timers here. We're 4 years. But that leveled me, and that told me that the only requirement in this room is that there be a problem of alcoholism in a relative or friend. And I needed her as much as she needed me. And I went to be with her, and she walked me through that. And when I came home, whatever that arrogance is about time, it's gone. I don't discount my time. I don't discount that I've claimed my chair, and that chair is mine. But I also know that I need you as much today as I did when I walked in these rooms. So I'm very, very, very grateful to the people that still show up. They still keep coming. And to the newcomer that comes in and says, well, it's his problem, and he's got one more chance. And I'm thinking, God, was I really like that? Because my deal was I had 1 foot in the marriage and 1 foot out the door. And when I finally started working on me and healing from me, and that's what you told me, you can't fix the marriage. You can't fix it. You can fix you. He can fix him, and then if it's time to come back together, then you can fix it together. I have no idea how long I talk. Okay. So one of the things that we do, and you know, I've been in this place because I finally did the writing and got back to the fact that my sister's dying. And so I take it out at home, and I start affecting my husband and our relationship. And God does for us. Saturday morning, I wanted to be in the yard working. I wanted to be painting. I wanted to do anything but having this young married couple come over and walk through some of the early turmoils they're having in their marriage. I didn't want to do it, but I did it because you taught me to do it anyway. So we sat with that couple for 3 hours, 4 hours, going through the big book and going through our steps to recovery, our Al-Anon 12 steps and 12 traditions. And we started talking about the traditions and how if it can heal a group, why can it not heal our home? And so they went away with the assignment, find what your primary purpose is. What is the primary purpose of your family? And when we meet again in 2 weeks, they're going to have a plan. It's not for me to tell you what it is you have to do, because it may turn out completely different than what I think it's going to turn out. But I can sure tell you what I did to find my answer. So they're all excited now. They're getting to see a whole new part of this program that they didn't know about. And so they're coming together and they're communicating. We talk in Al-Anon about talk to each other, reason things out, but let there be no gossip or criticism. I'd go to those meetings and I'd talk about him, and he did, and he did, and he did, and then they called me on it in the meeting, and I couldn't do it in the meeting anymore, so I'd do it when we went to Denny's afterwards. And he did, and he did, and he did, and then I'd go home and get into bed with him. So it made me feel unworthy. It made me feel like, what's wrong with me? So I use that, and I use it today. Let there be no gossip or criticism. So I don't gossip about my husband today. What I consider gossip, I have to go to my sponsor, because if I keep it inside, I'll self-destruct. So I go to my sponsor with this stuff, and I go to God with this stuff. But if I'm talking to two or three people about it, I'm into gossip. And if I want him to be the bad guy and I'm the good guy, I'm into gossip. The steps are just fabulous, because it always brings me back. If I will do the work, if I will sit down and if I will write and I will do what they tell me to do in here, I will find my answer. And a lot of times, it's not at all what the problem was that I thought it was. In alcoholism, and I heard a lovely lady out in California say one time, in alcoholism, the alcoholic attacks me and I go this way and I attacked my family. And it comes out sideways. And I don't want to do that today. My daughter and I started healing when I was in a meeting one night and I was sharing my experience in there. And then someone said, well, when she calls, why don't you just say thank you for calling? Thank you for letting me know you're alive. Instead of, what are you doing with your life? So I started doing that, and she started calling more. And she still ran a lot. She was in a business that... She was a stripper. I'm going to go ahead and say it, because I love this group and I trust this group. And I didn't know about that world. I didn't understand that world, and it scared me to death. And there was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous who had been in that world. And so she talked to me and she walked me through it. And she let me understand that I could turn my daughter over to the care of the bouncer. And so I did that for a while. And then I was able to turn her over to God. And so she started coming back into my life, and I stopped judging that life. For her, that was how she became fully self-supporting. And when I got that, I didn't have to judge and criticize. It didn't mean I wasn't scared, because there's stuff that goes on in that world that's scary. But I didn't have to judge and criticize her anymore. And so we started talking, and she saw the changes in my husband. She saw the changes in me, and one of the greatest changes we made in her life is we became stable. We became a consistent force. In Al-Anon, it talks about mean what you say what you mean, but don't say it mean. When I said no, I had to stand by the no. And she ran away one too many times, and I told her, I said, if you run away again, you can't come home. And when she came home, I couldn't let her in. Now, what I did do is I found a place for her to stay that night, because I couldn't completely turn her away. And it allowed me to look in the mirror and know that I had done everything I could do without enabling her one more day. And she was on the street for a while. And she's a beautiful young thing. And she was on the street for a while. And the guilt one more time, but I had to get past that. But what she knew is that when Bob and I said something, she could take it to the bank. And so she started calling more, and she started coming around more. And her uncle, who was with her dad when he kidnapped her, years later, probably 4 years ago, wrote her a letter. And you know, he didn't write a letter, because we didn't have an address then. But he called her and he said, I want to buy you a place to live. Because, see, she was always sleeping on somebody's sofa. And so if it got to where she didn't like it, she'd leave. And she'd fill up a paper sack and she'd go. And that was the life that my daughter had. And that's not what a mom wants. But he found her and he told her, you go find a place to live. She wanted to be in Atlanta with us, near us. That is the power of what Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon will do. She wanted to be near us because she knew what to expect. And the power of what happened with that is it was the first time that that part of her family had ever admitted what they had done in her life. And he said, when I did that, I changed your life forever. And he says, I am sorry. And so he got her a condo, and it's hers. And if somebody's there, she doesn't want them to be there, she can tell them that they have to go. It's made a huge difference for her. It's made a huge difference because I see her want to run, just like me. She wants to run, but she has her own place now. She's got her foundation. She's got her ground. And we get to see each other more and more and more. And she's been out of that world now. She's trying to leave that nightclub world and adjust into normal society. And I'm watching that struggle for her. Because if anybody finds out that that's what she did, they completely change how they believe and how they treat her. And so she's walking that fine line. But we got to go shopping the other day. She came and met me for lunch, and she's going to some kind of an event this week. And we got to go and do what moms and daughters go do. And I got to share with her some stuff that I have learned through the years. And it's just a blessing. And every day that I hear her and every day she calls, I say, I just want to tell you I love you and thank you for calling. And she'll call and leave a message. She'll go, yeah, Mom, I'm alive today. And it's a joke now. We can joke about it, but we can be honest about it. And the more we heal, the more we're able to talk about some of that part of her life. And it hasn't always been an easy conversation, but I shared with her that thing about Germany. I'd never shared that with her before. She told me, she says, I'm so sorry that I did that to you. I had no idea. I was just out doing and surviving and doing whatever I had to do. But the women in AA, there's a non-conference approved women's thing that we go to. We have AA women and Al-Anon women. And we started going to that 18 or 19 years ago so that we could bridge the gap. Because I'd sit in those open AA meetings and I'd see you and I'd think you wanted my husband. I didn't want him, but I didn't want you to have him. And so I was in there protecting my territory. So we started bridging the gap. And those young women that didn't have a good relationship with their mom, we got to learn how to do it. I got to learn how to be a mother to those young women, and they got to learn how to treat their moms with me. So when it was time for my daughter to be truly back in my life, I know when I don't need to be the mom, I can treat her like another member in this fellowship. And I can love her, not give her her answer, allow her to find her choices and find her own answer, and then not judge her. Big. But I have also learned in here that I have to stand for myself. And I don't have to compromise who I am anymore. It's not always easy. The hardest thing a family member can do is tell an alcoholic no. And then stand with their no. It has truly been the hardest thing I've learned how to do. And I've done it with my husband. I've done it with my sister. I've done it with my brother. I've done it with my daughter. And then not having to explain the no. I thought I had to explain it. I don't have to explain it. I don't have to justify. I don't have to defend. I just have to simply say no. And so I've worked real hard on that. And it's made me someone that people can count on. Because you could never count on me. Because I do too many things. I'd say, yes, I'll do this. Yes, I'll do this. Yes, I'll do this. I'd have 12 things to do in one morning. And then I wouldn't show up to any of them. And so people couldn't count on me. So I learned in here about first commitment. Whatever your first commitment is, that's the one you stand by. Even if you want to do something more than you want to do, sitting in the living room going through the book for 4 hours with someone, in the end, I'm so much better. I feel so much better. And I can go to the mirror at night, and I can look in that mirror, and I can say, I love you, Catherine, and you've done a good job today. Instead of being afraid to look at myself in the mirror and letting all that guilt and remorse hang all over me. I love to meet new people. I love to come do this. And you have treated me so well. I just love it here. I just love it. I remember I had been in this area maybe 10 or 15 years ago. And I just knew there was a bed and breakfast somewhere. And I just knew there was a historical area. But we sure couldn't find it. And so last night at dinner, I was talking about that. And when we Debbie? It's Debbie, right? We followed Debbie, and she took us through that area. What Al-Anon has given me is that I can see that today. I can see how people love me. And I can see that she went out of her way to give me something that I had just briefly mentioned to her. I couldn't see that before, because in alcoholism, enough is never enough. My husband, 2 years ago, I got home from work, and he had gone to the doctor and had some tests. And when I got home from work, he says, the test came back, and I've got cancer. Then the very next words he said is, I've called Barbara, and she's waiting for your call. That's my sponsor. The power of us in family recovery. He knows my sponsor. She knows him. She doesn't always like what he does. She loves him, and he could call her because he knew I was going to need her. So for 2 years, I've been so grateful that he's walking through this thing and he's alive and look at how he's recovering and thank you, God. And then I come home last week and the grass isn't cut. Jesus. Enough is never enough. But what I know is that it's not the grass isn't cut. It's inside here. So thank you that I have the tools. You have given me the tools to let that be 10 minutes instead of 10 years. Because in 10 minutes, I had gone from the point of, I'm just going to pack my bags, and when he cuts the grass, I'll come home. That's up here. That's up here. So I went from that to, well, last year, you were grateful he was alive. What happened? To, it's about your sister. It's not about the grass. 10 minutes. And so then I was able to go to him. And we were able to talk about it, talk to each other, reason things out, and let there be no gossip or criticism. Lois Wilson, I never had the opportunity of seeing her in person or meeting her. There have been people around me that had that privilege. But her words live with us. And her words are so powerful. And I always like to close with something from our literature. And we have a book, First Steps. I don't know if they still publish it or not. But it was about the first 35 years in Al-Anon. And she was writing about how we got Al-Anon together. And in the very back, one of the things that she said is, she said, anybody can start something, but it takes a lot of people to keep it going. You're keeping it going. This club is keeping it going. You will be here when one of my family members may reach out for you. I'll tell you a quick story that Cassandra told me this past week that I didn't know. When she was off in Oregon, she followed a man. It was always a man, just like me. It was always a man. And she followed a guy, and he was in AA, or he was around AA, I don't know. And he left her at the clubhouse. They were at some clubhouse, and he just left her there. So she's in Oregon. She has no clue how to get home. She has no money. So one of the guys was heading back to Atlanta, so she came back with him. The seed's planted. I don't know if she needs this or not. I know her life has been affected. The seed is planted. She knows where to go for help. Now, if it's a ride, whatever gets them in the door. Whatever gets them in the door. I don't know that she needs this program, AA. I know that she needs Al-Anon. But what I also know is that she sees the changes in our lives. And because of our changes, she's changed. It talks about, they talk about a pebble in a pond about service work. But I heard a woman talk about, you throw a pebble in a pond and it splashes everything around it. That's alcoholism. It splashes everything around it. And you have no clue how many people are affected. Recovery does the same thing. It just takes one person getting off the merry-go-round and changing the dynamic, and everybody around them will be affected. Because what I do will affect this person. What they do will affect this person. What they do affects the next person. And it may be 10 people down the road that hear the message. They may not want it, but they know about it, and they'll tell this person about it, and they'll walk in the room. That's how this deal works, and we keep it going. So I wanted to just read one more thing, then I'm going to close it up and tell you thank you, thank you, thank you. in here it talks about Lois saying that, I don't know that Al-Anon is a unique program. So many other organizations have the same general principles. Al-Anon's principles are a replica of AA's. In fact, all I did was copy AA. There is very little that is original to Al-Anon, so I quibble with the word unique. These Al-Anon principles are to live by, not just to wear on Sunday. They are for every day, every week, every year. You cannot change them to suit your mood. Conscious contact with God, for me, that God that I feared, that God that I thought was punishing me, my conscious contact is on a daily basis, in the moment, I reach up and say, okay, God, here I am, send me. Spirituality is the whole of Al-Anon. It is overwhelming, overpowering to see thousands upon thousands of Al-Anons gathered together at a convention, all with the same motivation. There isn't any Al-Anon without the spirituality. Carrying the message is done best by example. There's nothing that works as well. That's the power of AA. I share with you my experience, strength, and hope. In our literature, when we go through it, it talks about I share, I don't tell. When you tell me, I'm not going to hear it. When you share with me, I'm going to follow you. And I hope to keep following you. And thank you so much for everybody that came this morning, for all those people that came to the west side of town. I appreciate it. Anybody that knows Atlanta, the traffic is quite interesting. And a very short trip can be a very long trip. But I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to see people that I haven't seen in several years. And thank you very much. I love you all.